All right, we're recording. Hey, just like that.
Hey.
We're here. I'm here with Cynthia Kelly, nurse practitioner here in Yakima Valley. And we're working at, what's this? This would be called Union Gap?
Yeah, they call it Valley for some reason. Because we're on Valley Boulevard.
Okay.
Which gets confused with West Valley.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
So I'm always confused because also because I don't work over here very often too. But so Cynthia, I've worked with you, I don't know, maybe just a handful of times, like three or four times maybe. And we always have like a really good working relationship. And you're really easygoing, I think, that's how it seems to me.
I didn't think so.
Yeah. And so, I enjoy working with you. So let's chat. Today's a perfect day because we got nobody. Where are we? Let's look at this. Nobody. Actually, no, we have one.
On deck.
Okay.
Not even ready for us yet.
Gotcha. So we'll be pausing intermittently here. So tell us about yourself and, you know, your career, where you're from, your family, all that good stuff.
Well, I'm from here, so not really had to go too far, but been here all my life. I graduated high school 2001, and then did RN, got my bachelor's from WSU through a program here in Yakima in 2005, which means I graduated from nursing school 20 years ago, which seems impossible.
Well, okay.
And again,
high school here too, everything here. Okay.
Yeah, I know. I didn't get out much.
That's okay.
And then I worked in the emergency department here from actually when I was in school, so 2004 or so, until 2017. And
as a nurse practitioner or as
an RN?
Okay, got it.
And then in 2014, I got married and my husband started a new career. And I started grad school about a week after we got back from our honeymoon. So it's pretty busy. And then graduated in 2017 with my NP.
Cool.
Yeah.
Very good. So have you worked? This is, I always wanted to ask this. I probably should ask Jennifer this too, but have you ever gone back and forth from nurse practitioner to like moonlighting as a nurse doing any specialty stuff?
No, I haven't. There's definitely a possibility, and definitely when the, like, especially pandemic time when they were paying crazy amounts for travel, RNs, and really looked into it when I was thinking about leaving the previous clinic that I was at too, but it is, it's a lot. It's really hard on your body, really, the physical toll after a while. And, you know, I'm not 20 anymore. So,
especially in the ER. Here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, so now you've been, do the math for me, you've been a nurse practitioner now. How many years?
Seven, is that right?
Seven okay.
And a half,
So how's it been? It's all urgent care?
All urgent care, yeah. So when I graduated NP school, I started the urgent care that was associated with the hospital. So I was still in the hospital system. So I was at that hospital 19 years total because I was like a secretary and I worked my way up as a tech and then an RN. So I was with the hospital for 19 years and then I left to come here, 3 years ago? So pretty much, I don't remember what the question you asked me, but
I was asking about like how long you've been a nurse practitioner and like urgent care.
Yeah, and this is all urgent care.
Yeah. And so, the name of the podcast is A Courage Experiment. Mainly, I think it's because for me, I like to just be uncomfortable to grow, if that makes sense.
Yeah, totally.
And so I may ask you some uncomfortable questions.
I'm all right.
And the first one that popped into my head is, are you happy doing what you do? And are you happy here? You probably are. But if you're not, why?
Yeah, I would say overall, like it's when I look back at my time on the ER, in the ER, and it was fulfilling, and I was in my 20s, 30s, and, you know, I needed that adrenaline rush, and you were helping people, and especially night shift, you're together as a team, and you're working together, and I kind of miss those kind of things, but at the same time, when I started in the clinic, and I just realized how much like noise, like how all those alarms and the noise, just how quiet it was in the clinic and just how stressful and just like a overload that was. I think it's definitely healthier for my time and my life where I am now to be here. It's there was a little bit of primary care that I had to do at the end of my last clinic, kind of phasing that out. And it's just not my gig. So it's kind of a nice melding of kind of quote unquote treat them as treat them, where you're not making care plans and internal medicine kind of stuff necessarily. So I like that about here. I think, again, things change in your like as you go throughout life. And my kids, just how like busy they are right now, it would be great to, you know, work less, I guess. And my plan is to retire in about 7 years. But also, you know, when you retire, it's hard to just lose your license, I think, after all it took to get there. So I do think I would still, you know, work a bit and at least enough to keep your license. So I don't know what that really looks like. And as far as if I'm happy, it's fine. I wouldn't say, hey, this is the most fulfilling job in the world, because, you know, it's a lot of, hey, yep, you've got a cold, I can't fix it. But it's fine. It fits the bill. It does, you know, it's flexible. I really like the flexibility as far as family, vacations, that kind of thing. So I do like that.
Yeah. We had a, the podcast that I had earlier this morning that I was telling you about with Tim, the filmmaker. Towards the end, we were chatting about people that may not be happy in their profession, and even people who want to switch professions, how difficult that must be, having a 9-to-5. And then I've got kids and I've got family and I've got responsibilities and I've got bills and I've got this house, like how to get out from underneath a job that you hate or just are not happy with and want to do something that's passion filled and that kind of thing. And how difficult that is to do once you've got yourself entrenched into a career. So cool things for you is that, I mean, within, you know, sounds like 7 years or so, that you're going to be pretty much finished and just kind of moonlighting, which is, you're not far away from that.
Which is a
good thing. And also, it sounds like you're happy. Sounds like you're pretty happy with what you're doing now.
Yeah, and comfortable, which, you know, like you mentioned, we were talking earlier, isn't necessarily the best thing for growth, but there, you know, are periods in your time when it's great, you're hustling and growing, and then sometimes it's, you have periods in your life where it's, you know, you coast a little bit and you and you are kind of riding out that hard working time too.
And we also, that's another thing that we mentioned too, is that the having a career to where you're able to visit with spend some time with your family, quality time with your family. There's a balance there between, hey, I only work 3 12s a week and I get, you know, 4 days, 4 full days with my family, which is really awesome too. So those are good things. But overall, happy with Urgent Care and happy with the decision you made to become a nurse practitioner?
Oh, for sure. I think about, you know, and when I was going through MP school and my husband just started his, he had to study for his national boards for financial advisor. He was still in the military. And so, you know, that was 1 weekend a month that he was gone. And then I was still working full time as an RN. So that was at least 2 weekends a month. And then we had a 3-year-old and then I had a baby. And then, you know, so it was really, it was a lot. We're in a good place right now.
Advice for RNs who are not nurse practitioners or not, what is it, the other profession that a lot of nurses were going into? Nurse anesthetist. Those two high dollar professions from the step up from becoming an RN. Any advice that you'd have for new nurses or somebody who's just maybe been doing it 10 years and is like, you know what, I've always thought about becoming a nurse practitioner?
Yeah, I think, I mean, d- do it. It depends where you live for sure, because there's some places that don't pay enough for the change, I guess, for that. I mean, the education isn't cheap. So, and then the time, resources. So make sure where you're living is, it makes sense financially to do that. I do think also, if I wasn't an RN and gone through NP school, just how much harder that would be, because there are some people who just go straight on through. But I mean, not knowing names of medications or situations, or just that, I call it a spidey sense that you kind of get, and really it's pattern recognition that you don't necessarily realize that you are obtaining throughout the years. But you know, that's really important to this job, especially, you know, you walk in, you say, hey, is this patient sick or not sick? And you have to make that decision immediately. And, you know, if you don't have that experience, then you might miss those kind of things.
Yeah. And I really do feel that's something that's kind of overlooked as we kind of slog on daily, and we're just kind of working, and we're like, oh, this is like really easy and comfortable. But there is that spidey sense that you need to have, that as a new graduate, it's going to be really difficult for somebody to just walk in here and say, oh, this person just has a cold.
Yeah.
Or this fever is nothing, you know?
Right.
And so, I overlook that a lot. And I think that's a big, most of us have backgrounds as in the emergency room. And so I think that's something that's, in a way, almost needed to become like a really good mid-level in an urgent care.
Yeah, I think it's kind of the perfect combo, really. So you've had that experience and bringing it here.
Mm-hmm. Should we pause?
Yeah.
Do we need to? Okay. We'll do a quick pause because we got to see a couple patients. All right, we're back. So I just saw just one patient. You saw, how many did you see?
Two.
Okay. And I want to talk about my patient really fast, because you just turned me on to, I'll let you tell me about it, because this is a 5-year-old. How old was she? Hang on.
Two?
Make sure. Yeah, 2-year-old.
Pretty close.
Was it 2-year? Yeah, 2-year-old.
Yeah.
With a foreign body in the left nostril. So tell me about this. How do you, this is, Cynthia just taught me something today. After all these years of being a PA, never knew about this maneuver.
Yeah, so I guess I'm pretty sure I learned about this off of the Urgent Care Rep. You ever listen to that?
No.
It's really good. So hashtag shout out Urgent Care Rep.
Urgent Care
Rep.
Rep.
Yeah.
Okay, it's a app or podcast?
Yeah, podcast.
Okay, cool.
Bunch of emergency, urgent care. They have all specialties, but just talking about little things like that. So
cool.
So, foreign body in the nose. So say this kiddo had like a bead or something. It's usually something like that in the left nostril. So you, had the mom or parent, I should say, use their finger to occlude the right nostril, just push it. And then the parent puts her mouth over the kid's mouth and just gives it a big puff of air. And that can expel that foreign body out of the nostril, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, this is my first time seeing it done, and took two attempts, but the first one brought it out from deep in the cavity, almost out of the nair, and then mom gave it another blow and it popped right out of there.
Yeah.
And it was a humongous bead, by the way, in this child's nose, and it freaked me out. I started laughing. The child just sat there and was like, what just happened? And mom was freaking out about how big the bead was. She was like, oh my God, look at that size of that bead. So thank you for that. That was really cool.
Yeah.
Mother's kiss.
I think it's called Mother's Kiss.
Yeah. I actually put that in there, Mother's Kiss maneuver.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, it worked great. Thank you.
Yeah.
So anybody out there who has a foreign, and I guess, I mean, I told mom, I was like, well, now you don't have to come back in for this.
Yep.
You know, just do it at the house. Mother's kiss at the house.
Yeah.
So that was cool. Thank you for that.
Welcome.
And then you had a you do DOTs. I don't.
Yeah.
There's always this DOTs.
Yeah.
Nobody really likes doing them, it doesn't sound like, right?
There's a lot riding on them for the patient or person who's getting their DOT. I mean, their livelihood rides on this exam. So I understand the stakes are high, but there's a lot of, you know, arguing like, well, I mean, my blood pressure is not like this at home. And I'm like, I get that. Let's, you know, hang out and try and get the person to relax a little bit and recheck it. Or, but it's just, there's always this kind of argument about why something is the way it is. And, you know, this is my livelihood. And it kind of falls back on our fault. And, oh, I need this today. And kind of that lack of planning on your part doesn't necessitate an emergency on my part.
Mm-hmm.
But it's crazy because you can't go into the DMV and demand, like, if you don't have the right paperwork, you don't have the right paperwork. They're not going to be like, okay, well, hold on, let me check. And it's like that here. I think just because sometimes we're a little bit of a bleeding hearts, you know, you want the person to go to work. You don't want them not to, but... So, yeah, they can just be a little bit hard for that reason.
Yeah. And the providers that would listen to this know what we're talking about. But for those who don't, it's basically a Department of Transportation physical that certifies the driver to be healthy and be able to drive a commercial vehicle. And there's a lot that goes into that for the provider. I've seen the book. You guys have to know this book like front to back. And I know that you can reference it, but you have to know what, you know, there's a lot that goes into everything from neuro to endocrine to cardiac to, you know, all kinds of parameters in order to keep a driver safe.
Yeah. And there's very specific, specific specifications that you have to follow. I mean, we have to take a certification exam to even be able to do them now. And I mean, every heart murmur has a different regiment that they have to follow as far as you need exercise tolerance test every 2 years or, you know, echo. And so it's, you know, it's set forth by this governing body, the FMCSA, that we don't put forth, but you know, we have to follow. So
yeah. Do you know for as far as compensation, do you know anything about that, like the business side?
It's a cash pay. It's not like through insurance or anything, but
oh, I see.
I know sometimes they'll directly bill the employer or the patient will come in and then they'll get reimbursed. So
yeah, it's fallen under urgent care, kind of, or they have them done a lot at urgent cares.
Which I don't really think they should. I mean, you can write anything on these forms. So somebody can have a, you know, a very complex medical history, and we don't know. You know, they can write anything. You're just going off of what they say, so it's very... you know, subjective. And then you go to do an exam and see a huge scar on their chest and they're like, oh yeah, well I did have that quadruple bypass last year or something. So, it seems like something primary care would probably be better as far as accuracy of these too.
Sure. I just think you just kind of hit the nail on the head. It's a monetary thing probably, right?
Yeah,
like
I'm
it's
sure.
a money thing for urgent care. So just do them and get a quick payment. I don't know if that's the safest thing. It's the best for the patient or the people who are driving alongside these people.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah. And then you're right. We, not only that, and I don't want to admit, I don't want it to be like negative. I don't think it's a negative thing, but the other thing is like, you're seeing a bunch of patients that you're, like you said, treat and street, trying to get past patients or get patients out the door. And then now you have to really kind of spend some time with somebody, especially if they have like a lot of pathology. So those are tough.
Yeah. Reviewing paperwork when people bring in, when they do bring in, you know, paperwork that they're supposed to, say cardiac history or CPAP paperwork or et cetera. But, you know, it is kind of more the internal medicine more than anything else we do, because I'm like, oh, well, let me review all this history for you and look at this echo and what's your ejection fraction. And so it's more in depth than a lot of our patients really.
Exactly. So one of the few times you'll get to say ejection fraction.
Yeah. Especially in urgent care.
Yeah, in urgent care. So we'll switch gears for a minute here and let's talk. We were talking politics just a minute ago. I love to talk politics. My buddy, Tim, who I did a podcast with just earlier this morning, squeaked out of a conversation, a podcast or during that podcast about politics.
Smart Tim.
Very smart. Very smart Tim. But yeah, so let's go. Cause we were mentioning before we got back on, we were talking about, wow, we're on our phones like, oh, look at this Charlie Kirk stuff is still happening.
Yeah, right.
So thoughts on, we'll just open that gate up and just like let the animals out. what are your thoughts on that whole thing?
I mean, you know, I had never heard about this guy before. From the overall sounds of it, probably not a dude I would like hang out with. We probably have different views on stuff, but I mean, how about we just not shoot people? I think I definitely believe in freedom of speech and democracy and not just not killing people for what they think. And so, yeah, not necessarily a message that I would be interested in hearing. I don't think.
Yeah.
But it's no reason to kill a guy. And actually, that's the problem I think here is.
Did he deserve it?
No, absolutely not.
Yeah.
Yeah. No.
Yeah. That. And I'm glad that you mentioned. Kind of freedom of speech.
Yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
Because that has really come up, especially with, in, I don't know if you saw this, the Jimmy Kimmel thing like a week or two ago too.
Yeah.
And it's interesting that that's happening kind of at the same time. Well, I mean, that's why he got canceled or that's why he got pulled off because of Charlie Kirk.
Yeah.
But cool that, I don't say cool, but interesting that they both happened together because you got one guy on one side, because they're on two different sides of the political spectrum.
Yeah.
One guy gets shot and killed, and the other guy is talking about it and not saying he deserves it, but saying something along those lines a little bit, I guess. And then he gets pulled off the air. And I don't know about you, and we may not see eye to eye on this, but I think that you should be able to say anything no matter how bad it is. And I hate to say that because somebody will give me an example and say, well, what about this?
Mm-hmm.
And say something really vile.
Sure.
And then you're like, oh, that's a tough one, you know?
Well, the whole freedom of speech is that you're free from from government persecution, right? For what you say, unless it's hate speech, which is there another specific criteria?
That?
There are specific criteria I saw the other day.
Really?
So as far as Jimmy Kimmel, like he didn't have a per se direct government, you know, he wasn't in trouble with the government, you know, firsthand, probably third handedly, but so. As far as freedom of speech, she still has freedom of speech from a government standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, the fact that he got canceled for, and I don't know what he said, so I guess I can't have too much of an opinion.
Yeah.
As far as what it is, but
yeah. Do you think? So I'm gonna ask you some kind of sensitive questions. Do you think that you should be able to talk about race in a derogatory fashion? Can you be racist and be open about it?
So I guess short answer would be yes.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
I mean, comedians do it all the time. You know, I think it's how it's maybe aimed. So if it's in a be able to, yeah, I guess that's freedom of speech, unless it is one of those things. Again, I should look up that definition again, like what is and what isn't.
Mm-hmm.
But you allow it in like comedy. I mean, it's all the time and you laugh because, oh yeah, and if you don't take it too seriously, but you know, it's different, I guess, if you're putting down people, maybe it's how it's how it's laid out.
Mm-hmm. So my thought is that you should be able to say whatever you want. Mm-hmm. I really do think that. And yeah, there are some things that somebody would bring up and say, this is really vile. And I would have to honestly go along with it. The reason why I feel that way is that let's take race for just an example. Let's say I don't like whatever. I don't like Chinese people. And, you know, I think that all Chinese people should not exist. Okay, let's just say that. Okay, we'll go far, right?
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Without saying I'm going to get a gun and start shooting Chinese people, okay? And even then, if you say that, at least we know. I guess that's my whole point is that. Is that at least we know who you are and we need to watch out for you. And we need to, like, you've already said it. You've put it on the record that you hate Chinese people, right? Or, and if you make a threat or whatever hate speeches, at least we know that you have made that vile threat of I'm going to kill Chinese people. Okay, this is as an example. I feel that if you suppress that, like if you tell people that they can't say that, it's not going to change how they feel about Chinese people. It's just that they're going to...
But that person who's, let's say, again, we went that far.
Yeah, okay.
That person who says that, something like that, if there's a rule that says, hey, you can't say this kind of stuff, they're not going to care about that rule. Like, obviously...
If they're that kind of person, you mean?
Yeah, like, they probably have some sort of...
Well, they have... They're smart races, too, right? there's some smart ones, right? And so... I guess that's my view on it.
Yeah.
You know, whenever I hear somebody says, oh, they got canceled or they lost their job or they this or that. Oh, well, losing your job, that's okay. That is what it is. The employer has the power to do what they want. But this person, even here in Great Britain, they're arresting people for stuff like that now, like posting stuff or saying stuff. And man, that's dangerous, in my opinion. I mean, I could be wrong. I'd be open to hear what anybody else has to say about it, but I feel like that's wrong. I don't want to hear it, obviously.
Right.
But I don't think that somebody should not be able to speak, you know, and say what they want about whatever. Even if they were racist directly against me and said, I don't like the Jason kind, you know what I mean? Like, and I hope that Jason, you know, doesn't exist anymore or whatever.
Yeah.
I'd at least be like, okay, I at least know where to keep you, right?
Stay away from that guy.
Yeah, stay away from that guy kind of thing. And then they've put it on the record, so employers would probably stay. It's like they do it to themselves. They almost, like, alienate themselves that way.
Again, is it freedom of speech? Anybody can say anything they want. It's whether you have that government persecution because of what you're saying. Is that kind of what you're saying? Like, you don't think that should be a thing?
Yeah, I think that that should be like almost like a natural byproduct of your speech, right? Like whatever you're saying, let's say you're saying something I don't agree with at all, but there's five people that agree with you. Or there's 10 people or 1,000 or 1,000,000 people that agree with you. At least we know where those people stand.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I'm a follower of Cynthia who hates Chinese people. Okay.
Hold on.
Pump the brakes. But you know what I mean? Like, at least we know, like, where those people are standing as far as that's concerned. Because if you don't know, then, I mean, how do you know, like, who you're talking to?
You don't. I mean, you don't.
But the more you suppress it, you don't know who's who. Like, what is going on?
Sure.
Yeah. And I grew up in a time where that wasn't really a thing.
Yeah.
And there was also some racism, too.
Yeah, so, right. Oh, yeah. I remember some of the words we said when growing up, and I'm like, man, no way you say those words.
Yeah,
that
you can't
terrible.
Say those words now, you know, or even about gays or anything else.
Yeah.
Like, it's like, there's no way you can say that kind of stuff.
No.
But it did back then. You knew, oh, I know that Bobby doesn't like gay people,
right.
You know, or I know that he doesn't like this person or that person. At least you know who you're talking to.
Yeah.
And if they're, let's say, a manager of a company or like a business owner or something like that, you know to kind of steer clear of, okay,
sure,
I'm not going to get anywhere in that environment.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So I think that we're shooting ourselves in the foot with this whole like suppression of speech thing.
Instead,
and again, could be wrong.
Right.
I don't know.
Instead of transparency, you're thinking like, hey, at least to be upfront, transparent. I know what I'm dealing with.
Yes.
Sure.
Not condoning it at all.
Right.
And I think that's where we get people's lines crossed is like, oh, I think they should be able to say anything. Oh, so you agree with that? Right. No. It's a completely separate conversation. Mm-hmm. So yeah. But yeah, this the whole political thing. Are you free to talk about how you stand, where you stand politically?
Oh, yeah. Let's see. My husband coined the term. Oh, maybe. I don't know if he did or he got it from somebody else. But he said, you are socially Democrat, fiscally Republican.
Mm. I think I'm, yeah, okay, yeah.
That makes sense. So, yeah, no, I and ask anybody here, I will, when it's time to vote, I grab my voter's pamphlet, and I go through every single candidate. So I don't like to vote along party lines, but that being said, most of the time I vote Democrat because of, you know, reading through and reading people's bios, and if they even took time to even put a bio in, it says a lot about a candidate for whatever it is. It could be school board, it could be president or governor or whatever it is. But and then for certain things like school board, like I'll ask my teacher friends, like, hey, who do you think would be, who are you guys voting for? Or, you know, a judge, I'll ask my, you know, judge or attorney friends, like, hey, who, You guys are in this, like, you're in the thick of it. What do you think?
Yeah.
So getting, I like to get that information, and then vote. And it's not, I don't always vote Democrat on everything. Mm-hmm. It just depends on the candidate.
Yeah. How do you feel about, like gun rights and that?
Yeah. So my husband is a veteran. He retired from the military after 20 years. And so he is very comfortable with guns. I didn't grow up around guns, but I do want like my children to be comfortable with shooting guns. So I think it's, I think there's definitely, it's a gray where, hey, it doesn't need to be all or nothing like this. Well, it's Second Amendment right, you know, stuff. Like, well, A, if we know what the definition of an amendment is that it's something that's changed or added. So,
yeah.
So this can always be changed. And I think I'm for, you know, smart laws, gun laws. I don't think guns should be outlawed by any means. We own several. I think I've shot one at the range once. I don't have a problem with guns per se, but I do think, you know, one of our MAs or secretaries came in the other day and she said, yeah, I'm gonna think I'm gonna do nails again. She's like, I just have to get 40 hours of doing nails so I can get my license. And I'm like, how many hours of anything do you need to you know, own a gun? It's like,
good point,
right? Yeah. Like, hey, why don't we take a hunter safety class and like go to the range and show that you have, you know, safe skills. Like, these aren't crazy things. And for anybody who, you know, owns or shoots guns, like, that shouldn't be an issue. If it is an issue, then that's a concern. Like,
yeah.
Hey, let's just make this smart.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. Very, yeah. Well thought out. I mean, I agree with that. It's weird. As you were talking about guns, I was thinking about pregnancy in the same way.
Yeah.
I was like, where's the course about like getting pregnant?
Right.
Like, why don't people take classes about that?
Yeah.
Right. You got to take a test to drive a car.
Yeah, exactly.
But to bring a life into the world.
Right.
You can do it when you're like, your brain isn't formed yet.
Right. I mean, my husband and I are child, I think I was 32, and it was our second kid. And still, when they're like, all right, well, see you later. And we're like, you guys are just letting us leave with this thing? Like, this is a tiny, tiny human. Mm. And it is crazy.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, more important than guns.
Right.
Yeah, you know, right. That'll cause a lot more harm.
Right.
Than a gun will, you know?
Yeah.
There's a lot of bullets there. Yeah, it's interesting. We could definitely clean up our society in a lot of ways. A little transition. You're talking about your husband a little bit. What can you? Are you free to talk about your family? Like,
Oh yeah. Of course.
Okay. What does your husband do, and what? How many kids and all that family life?
So he is a financial advisor now. So we got married in 2014, and I had a son from a previous relationship. So he was 3 when we got married. And that was in 2014. Sorry, I think computer right. And so, yeah, he was in the military. I was still in an RN working full time. We got back from our honeymoon, and the day after we got back, he started studying for his Series 7, Series 66. I don't know. So big financial tests you had to pass to do that job. Mm-hmm. And then a week later, I started grad school, so that was a little bit crazy. So 2014 till now. So he's been a financial advisor for 11 years, and then he retired in, gosh, maybe 2017 from the Army. He was National Guard. He was active, I think, the first 4 years. Not very good with timelines here. But, yeah, he did 2 tours overseas and retired out. So that was nice.
Yeah.
Having a little bit more time after he did that. So
yeah. What's it? And so now the son that you had that was 3 is now...
He's 16.
16, okay.
Yeah,
so, and you have how many kids with your husband now?
1. So we have two children. Uh-huh. He adopted my son when he was 8.
I see. Oh, yeah. Okay, interesting.
Yeah.
So same kind of thing with our family. Like I have a stepdad that... Well, and now a new stepdad, but yeah. I had a couple stepdads, and it's always interesting to find out or to know, possibly know. I mean, I guess you'll never know, like how a stepfather. So you could probably expound on this a little bit, like from what you've seen, treats his child, quote, blood child versus, you know, do you see, and I don't want to put you on the spot,
no,
but,
you're fine.
But like for me, for our family, there definitely was a big difference, you know, and no hard feelings. It is what it is, you know, but is it difficult? Is that difficult?
No, not at all. My son was not even 2 when my husband and I started dating. So he's been around his life forever. And then my son's biological father moved away, and again, it wasn't a great situation. So when he was 8, he got to finally officially adopt him. But I mean, he's been dad since, I don't know, my son was like 4 or something.
Mm-hmm.
So the only difference is that our second child is a girl. So I think there's some daddy's girl stuff too. And then it probably helps or obviously shapes the situation that my husband, he didn't know his dad at all until he was 15, and then kind of started to have a relationship a bit on and off with him too. So, you know, he grew up with a single mother, and definitely, I think, shaped the way he fathers our son now.
Yeah.
So could kind of relate, I guess. But,
sure. Can probably make a really good positive difference.
Yeah.
Yeah,
oh, yeah.
That's awesome. When you first met your husband now, did you know?
Yeah.
Right away?
Yep.
Really?
Yeah. Took him a little bit, but.
okay. Well, usually the woman knows first before it even happens.
Yeah.
So that's always, always gets me upset to know that. But, tell me about that. Like, where did you see him?
All right. So we met on, and this is, it was not cool back then, but we met online on Match.com before.
Hey,
talking online was cool. You know, I guess it'd be an app now, but so it was super like lame. Like, I didn't want to tell people how we met first.
It's okay. So, but was it a picture that's what got
no,
you?
No, he messaged me, and he's the only person, because I have like a 1-year-old and I'm working full time, and I own my own home, and like, I mean, I'm busy. Like, I'm not going out anywhere. So I was like, well, this is the only, I guess, try this, you know, kind of thing out after it'd been like a year since my son's biological father and I had split. So, you know, like a year later, like, well, I guess we'll try this newfangled Match.com out.
Mm-hmm.
And he messaged me. I didn't message anybody. Who was the first person I ever talked to. And I was like, oh, this guy uses complete sentences and like his grammar is good. So like, we'll go with that. And
before AI.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Exactly. Okay. So, yeah, no, we just talked on that. Like, I can't remember. It'd be fun to like go back and look at the messages, you know, now. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you can try it. Talked on that and then, you know, texted a little bit and then started talking. And then we met, I don't know, maybe a month later or something, in Prosser, which is like Kilo Dentricities at the time. So, not quite halfway, but pretty close, but it was a bunch of wineries and stuff. So we went and had dinner and we were sitting outside at this, you know, bistro kind of thing and had some pizza. And I knew because, all of a sudden there's these like a fluffle of puppies. I don't know what you call a group of puppies, but I would think like a fluffle, like bunnies.
A fluffle. Yeah, okay.
That's what I would call it. So okay. A fluffle of bunnies come up and everybody's puppies come up running up to all the people eating outside. And we're like, oh my God, a bunch of puppies. And everybody kind of starts like giving them little bites of their food and stuff. And then the mama dog is coming up. And the workers there were like, oh, she had her puppies. She used to always come up here. And then she hasn't been back for a while because she had her puppies. She's bringing her puppies back to show us.
Cool.
Which is cool. And my husband goes, okay, well, don't forget the mama dog, and feeds the mama dog. And I'm like, oh, and that's when I knew.
That's it. Right
that
there?
That was it.
Oh, yeah. That's cool.
I'm like, yeah, don't forget the mama dog. It's this guy.
Nice.
Yeah.
And so right then you knew.
That was right then.
Wow, that's actually like a really cool story.
Yeah.
And so from then on, it was like you're trying to get your hooks in.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I mean, I didn't have to try too hard.
That's good. Oh, that's awesome. Does he know that?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So
mama dog, I got to remember that. I got to remember that trick.
You got to feed the mama dog.
Got to give the mama dog love.
Yeah. Absolutely.
As soon as he got, what kind of dog was it?
I don't remember. It's been a couple of years now.
I'm picturing this dog now.
Yeah.
With this big, like, saggy belly.
Yeah.
That's running out with all her puppies.
All her little puppies.
That's cool. Everybody's feeding the puppies, and he said, give me the mama dog. Yeah. Let me take care of her.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
I like it.
Yeah.
I like it. Good
Keep
guy.
That one right here.
I will. It's right up front. It's right up front.
Yeah.
That's awesome. So from that first, that was the first date.
Yeah.
And from that day, like,
well, yeah, I mean, we dated, we kind of back and forth because again, he's in the military working full time. I've got a full time job and a house and a kid. And so, you know, we kind of back and forth and then he ended up moving to Coeur d'Alene for his job.
Beautiful there.
Yeah. So we broke up.
Did you really?
Yeah, for like 6 months.
You didn't want to, no long distance. It was like an actual.
We did. It was, he had no business dating actually initially. And I told him that as he had moved from, so when he was overseas, he was started talking to like a girl he knew in high school kind of thing who lived in Colorado and he lived in Florida at the time. So when he came back, they were like, oh, I'll move to Colorado and we'll be together kind of thing. Well, he did. He moved all his stuff from Florida to Colorado. And then, like, he's like, the first night I got there, I knew something wasn't right. And I said, like, a week later, maybe he came home and there was a note on the door, like, I can't do this kind of thing.
Oh, no.
So he's like, And so
that's
he
tough.
Moved to Tri-Cities where to... live with his biological dad, who, again, he didn't even know him until he was 15. So he thought, well, I'm here. I don't really want to go back to Florida because I just left there and just try this out. So that's how I ended up here. And
I see.
Yeah.
Interesting. So, wow, that's an interesting story. God, what a heartbreak.
Yeah,
right?
I know.
It's tough.
It'd be hard.
Yeah. Seems like, yeah. Nothing against women, but man, they can be rough, boy. I mean, guys can too. I was just talking to a friend of mine. I was like, God, women are kind of mean, aren't they?
Yeah.
And
we
he
are.
Just busted out laughing. I was like, how's that funny? Is that really that funny?
It's funny because it's true.
It is true.
Because we have to be.
The girls here, I don't know where they're at right now, but some of the girls here, just some of the stuff they say, I think they forget I'm a guy. And I'm like, God, that was so mean.
Yeah.
And they're like, he deserved it.
Yeah.
Or whatever. I'm like, wow. It's like playing on the playground where, you know, you see a girl pull a kid's hair, like pull him down by his hair or something. It's like, give me that, you know?
Well, you know, when you're here and you're the only guy, like you're just going to become part of the girl.
Yeah.
Gaggle.
Just like you guys call me the queen when I walked in or something. Yeah.
Princess. Yeah.
Yeah. The princess. Well, that's a great story.
Yeah.
Thank you. My sister always said that she knew when she met her husband too, like, and she's like, you'll know.
Yeah.
I'm like, well, I don't know about that.
Guess you just haven't known yet.
I just haven't known
yet.
Yeah. I've met a lot of really special girls.
Yeah.
But yeah, not that feeling that she describes of you'll just know, trust me, you know? And, my sister doesn't care, but she was, well, I guess maybe she might care, but I'll just go say it anyway. She, my sister dated guys and then she dated girls, for a couple years. And I didn't know what to think of that, but I still love my sister. It's, you know, supporting my sister and stuff. And I was like, well, I guess she's gay now. You know, it is what it is. Just have to get used to this. And then she comes home and says she's met this guy that just, like, you know, rocks her world. I was like, where'd that come from?
I guess you just fall in love with souls, I guess.
Yeah. So, and when I met him, they're still married to this day, by the way. His name's Greg, the most amazing guy. I'm like, this guy, you know?
Like Greg?
Because she's really talking him up, you know? And then you're thinking you're going to meet this superhero.
Yeah.
And then Greg walks in. I'm like, where is he?
Yeah, is he behind Greg?
Yeah, not much could fit behind Greg, but he grew on me too. Like within minutes, like I was like, wow, this guy's that's awesome.
I think some people just like feel like home. You know, you just feel right.
That's a good description of something I haven't experienced. But okay, I'd like to come home.
Yeah,
you know, that's everybody wants to come home.
Right.
Yeah, I like that. I like that. And I've never heard it put like that before. Yeah. She always just says, you'll know. Yeah. Same thing with my mom. But my mom's known, I guess, 3 times now.
Oh.
Yeah, she's on her 3rd marriage.
Different situations.
But you can tell that she's actually really happy this time, which is really great to see. But yeah, I like that. I like that. So how many years now? And like, it sounds like happily married.
Yeah. Let's see. So we got married in 2004. So 11 years, 11 and a half years.
Okay. Well, that's still kind of fresh.
Yeah. Yeah. With 2 kids.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do we need to move or no?
Let's see. What's that top one?
You got 16 minutes on DOT.
Oh, no. Is that my new one or my old one?
Sergio.
Oh.
Oh, whoops. I don't know. Was I supposed to say that?
Cancel that part out there.
Cancel that part out.
Yeah, it's a new guy.
That's a new guy. Okay.
Maybe we should pause.
So we'll pause. All right. All right, we're back.
Oh, that was fast.
Okay. That's fast. Just press the button. All right, we're going to close it up.
Yep.
We're at 47 minutes. We're here at work, or we may or may not close it up, but it sounds like we're going to. We haven't seen that many patients, and we have just one person on the board. So I'll let you take the lead because we're going to turn you into a budding podcaster, I think.
Okay, yeah.
You have the voice for it.
I don't know about that.
Yeah. You know, I did Jennifer?
Yeah.
Simon? And so,
I can watch or listen.
And so she, this guy texts me and goes, she has a really nice voice, kind of in a creepy way.
Ooh.
I told Jennifer that, and she's like, ooh, just same kind of reaction. But you guys both have nice voices, actually.
Aww,
like broadcastable. What I would think is, I mean, it sounds it's pleasant.
Yeah.
Oh,
it's pleasant.
It's a pleasant, I mean, better than not, right?
Right.
Okay. Like, so, don't you think? You can hear yourself. You have the headphones.
I can, but you know when you hear your own voice and you're like, is that my voice?
Yeah.
Is that my voice?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's you.
Okay.
Yeah, let me confirm. But yeah. So, we've discussed a lot.
Yeah.
In just 47 minutes. So, I'll let you close it up with us.
Oh man.
Anything you want to discuss?
So we talked about my relationship. So we were going to get, I needed to turn the tables. How'd the tables turn?
How the tables have turned.
Yeah.
How the turns table.
How the turns have tabled.
Yeah. Yeah.
Tell me all about you.
Oh, can you be like a little bit more specific?
I suppose. Okay. So you came to Washington because...
Oh, yeah. So, wow, we're going to get right into that. Mm-hmm. It was a relationship, and it was a couple years ago now. And, yeah, so one, it didn't work, obviously.
Well, how'd you meet?
Oh, we met at work, and we were working together in Hawaii.
Okay.
And she, we decided to move. But it was really, I really didn't want to leave Hawaii. Mm. Not really. I think I would have liked to have done like a long, like few months away, maybe a couple months away to reset and then come back. But I ended up moving. And first time living in Washington, I'd visited Washington before, and I really liked it. I honestly like the city of Seattle. Not that I would live there, but I just enjoyed that city. I mean, it's the quintessential city.
Sure.
It's got everything that a city, like a big city, would have. And it's also really beautiful, surrounded by water. So anyway, long story short, ended up moving out here a couple years ago. And the relationship didn't work out, and she ended up leaving, and I ended up staying, actually. And I actually moved back to Hawaii for a few months and then moved back out here because, you know, we work in the states that we're licensed, and, you know, sometimes it takes a little while to get licensed. So I just kind of picked from the states that I'm licensed in. It was New Mexico, Washington, Hawaii, Florida, and South Carolina. My license had lapsed. So I just picked Washington again because it was easy. And like I said, I really liked it. It was beautiful. So that's.
So you moved here with her.
Mm-hmm.
And is that when you lived in Bellingham?
No, I actually lived in, do you know where Woodinville is?
Yeah.
I lived in Woodinville at the time. And I really liked it there. I liked Woodinville. And that's close enough to Seattle. Pretty much just on the outside of Seattle there.
Yeah.
And when I came back, I moved to Bellingham. And I like Bellingham. I mean, sure. I've driven through there to Canada and stuff, and I stopped in Bellingham. It's the coolest little town or city, or just a lot different than the rest of Washington, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, in a way, right?
It's pretty big. I mean, Bellingham's not.
It actually is pretty big. Yeah. It's like 90,000 people.
Yeah.
So it's, pretty good size. Yeah. And college town.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's kind of like here. I mean, or Ellensburg.
Ellensburg.
Yeah, but not as... Bellingham is like three times as big, probably.
Yeah.
So, yeah, when I moved back, I just decided to... I found a good job in Bellingham. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, I found a job here. Yeah, I talked to David and Candace and Crystal over the phone and decided to come out and meet everybody. And as you know, everybody's like really personable here.
Yeah, I think so. I think that's one of the reasons that I... stayed here, appreciate it as coming from a big hospital organization, you're just another number, and so I definitely appreciate here where they're concerned for your welfare, like when you're sick, and sent you video and stuff. I remember that and stuff, so and just stuff like that. I think they're pretty neat.
That choked me up actually. Oh, really? When I was in the hospital. Yeah, because I mean, I don't know if it's because it's all the narcotics I was on or what, but I was like, I was so out of it, and that my phone was there, but I wasn't like, I wasn't worried about my phone, but every so often it would be like, Jason, you have messages and you have this and that, and I would just like sit, I'd be laying in bed, and then they would actually show me or whatever, and then I just. I don't know. At that, there was a few like weeks there where I was crying about everything.
Yeah.
Anytime somebody would do something, I'd cry. I'd be like, I was like, oh, Jason's crying again.
Don't worry about him. He's just crying again.
Yeah. He's just falling apart.
Yeah.
but yeah, that was actually really weird too, because you can't control that either. It's not
like being a woman.
It's I wouldn't know, but I've seen it firsthand. It's weird because if I see something now that's a tear jerking type, you can stop yourself.
Yeah.
For me anyway, I don't know about you, but yeah. I can stop myself. I'm like, oh my God, I'm going to cry. Stop it. You know?
Yeah, that's the ER in you. You just suppress it. Just stuff it way down.
Exactly. I like that. Have you seen Bill Burr do that?
No.
Oh, you gotta watch Bill Burr talk about it. Okay. Stuffing it way down. Anyway.
Yeah.
But when I was there, again, I think it was the meds, but when, it's little things would happen. I would just bust out crying. I'd be like, I'm sorry. Oh. I'm sorry. I'm crying. but that made me cry, that video.
No.
Yeah. So
that's awesome.
But, anyway, yeah. So that's kind of why I'm here. And then I'm going back.
Yeah.
You know,
when are you going back?
I should have been back. I'm still here trying to sock away some money. So I'm opening up a small clinic, and I think one of the big reasons I'm still here, I mean, I would like to have been gone, but I'm financing it myself.
Mm-hmm.
And with the help of Dr. Simoto, she's a supervising physician. And she works on Oahu, lives on Oahu, but she's my partner in this.
Mm-hmm.
And she's helping a lot. She's amazing, but I'm financing it. And the longer I stay, just the more money I have, like of a cushion. And so, the more I can sock away, the better,
yeah.
You know? And so I would have liked to have been gone like already, like mm-hmm. last month, but I think I'm going to stay probably until the end of this month. Go for a couple of weeks, come back, work the end of November, and then I'll be gone.
Yeah. Exciting.
Yeah, it's exciting. It's a big step. It's a big step. And I always wanted to do it, you know, and there's only one way to figure out if you can really do it, right?
Let's
go do it.
No better time than the present.
Exactly. And then getting sick too wasn't like, it wasn't all bad.
Yeah.
I'd say 99% of it was bad. But
yeah.
But there was little gems in there of like, if I get out of this, when I get out of this, you know, this is what I want to do. Or this is what I feel like I should do because I don't know if you've ever been close to dying or anything.
Yeah, I have actually.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's that'd be an interesting story. but you would know this, is that once you make it back from that, you're kind of like, okay, I just touched the edge, you know,
yeah.
Or I looked over the edge.
Yeah.
And so it's like, okay, I've seen what it looks like.
Right.
And so what do I do now? I've been given a chance to go back, you know, mm-hmm. and that's how I feel.
Yeah.
You can get complacent too. And, you know, of course we all get caught up in stuff, but I'm trying to keep that close, even though it was terrifying.
Mm-hmm.
I try to keep that feeling close to say, okay, Right when you start doing the things that you were doing before that was maybe not leading you down the best road, how can I change and how can I be better? And what kind of things did I think about when I was in that hospital bed that I needed to do? I need to bring that back, you know? So part of that, you know, I'd say part of it, that a lot of it played a big part in like me making the actual decision to do it too.
I think that plays into, I think, a couple things. One, working in the ER and seeing, you know, death and bad stuff over years. And then also, yes, while having a near-death experience.
Mm-hmm.
It just kind of makes you care less about the little stuff. You know, you say, like, oh, you seem pretty chill. Like, because in the grand scheme of things, like, we're all here. We're okay.
Yeah.
Like, So it definitely makes you reevaluate what you need to kind of be concerned about or freak out about too.
Yeah. And that's why I appreciate that about you. I can tell that you have that, you know, that calm, not that we have a storm here, but,
right. But
calm under like, you know,
dress.
Whatever pressure. And it's always nice because I've always said this being, I was in EMS too, being part of EMS, hang on, I think we should take that. Hang on. Yeah, that's right. So yeah. We're back on. Had to press pause here for a second. But yeah, we're going to wrap it up. We were saying something about EMS and being chill.
Yeah. And EMS.
Yeah. The calm, being the calm operator.
Smooth operator.
Yeah. Because kind of trickle down effect, right?
Yeah. You have to be calm because you have to be the calm in the proverbial storm.
Yeah. And like we were saying, not so much of a storm here. I mean, it does get busy as hell.
Sure.
But it's more of like busy with little, you know, it's more, who was I telling the other day? It's not necessarily the medicine. It's the multitasking, which is actually fun, I think.
Yeah.
Don't you?
I mean, I think I'm definitely more productive when I'm busy because then you're like, okay, I've got to do this. And then that'll give me a couple minutes to go do this procedure and then I'll come back and eat like a puzzle almost.
Mm-hmm.
And make it the most value of my time.
Yeah. Yeah. I was also saying, like, you're giving me PTSD talking about that relationship from before.
You're welcome.
Yeah, thank you. Well, also, I mean, you have to learn, right, from, like, shitty things that happen.
Absolutely.
And just, like, getting sick or whatever. Like, you have to learn from that shitty, shitty stuff. And unfortunately, for me, it was almost like a triple whammy because I was getting over that when I got, you know, hospitalized.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, why is this happening?
Yeah.
Like, you know, and if it wasn't for my mom, man, like my mom came out of like nowhere. Like we were talking, but we weren't even really talking that much. But she came out like a superhero.
Aww.
Like flying around with her cape.
Go, Mom.
Yeah. And like, you know.
That's what moms do.
That's, yeah, yeah. I mean, that's, she did it. Yeah. And it was at a point in her life, too, where she was just giving up her nursing license, too.
Mm-hmm.
But she came and I was her final patient, I think.
Aww.
Yeah. It was like that.
Pretty poetic, actually.
Yeah. I was like that. It was like that, which was pretty neat. But yeah, it just tells you, man, you need to have people in your life that are like really important and treat them well.
Yeah.
You know, I learned a lot about that too. So I guess, you turned the tables on me. Is there anything, and this is, I ask all guests this, is there anything that you have to offer as far as, I know. Not money. I know you got a lot of that. No. But is there anything you would offer up to any listeners out there that, you know, whatever it is, that's a nurse, new nurse, someone going through a hard time, somebody who's sick or somebody who's, you know, pearls of wisdom from over the years as a provider, as a, you know, sounds like a good mom, you know, sound like a good parent. So parenting, anything that's like of use.
I think, you know, whenever my kids get on the bus or when they leave, I always say, be kind, make good decisions. I think that's kind of a standard, but I do think about when I was in the hospital.
Oh, please.
Yeah.
We just skated right over that. Your death experience. Yeah. Is that okay for to talk about that?
No, it's totally fine. Yeah. No, I was in my last semester of grad school, and I thought I had the flu for like 12 days. Well, it turns out I had multiple shotgun embolism, pulmonary embolisms, and a clot from my iliac vein, like basically, so that's like your groin area, down my entire leg. So, I didn't have the flu. I had blood clots in my lung, part of my lung died, and I was in the ICU for a few days. And then I had to go to that weekend was our clinical experience. And so I called, I had to be prone, like laying on my back in the ICU, called my instructor. I'm like, yeah, so I'm in the ICU. And she's like, okay, well, you know, if you're not here, then you don't pass. And so I got out of telemetry, and like the next day, my friend, another nurse, and she drove me up there. We went up to do our thing in campus, and I'm like literally with a wheelchair and I had a walker, I guess, at that point. Got it done, but perseverance, you know. But with that experience, I managed to not call anybody any bad names. You know, people are like, oh, they're just rude or whatever, and like, sorry, I'm sick. You know, I've been near death, and I managed not to call anybody a bitch when I was there. Mm-hmm. So just be kind in general. Like, it's not that hard. And just because you're in a shitty place doesn't mean you have to be rude.
Yeah. No, that's good. That's a good one. I'm just trying to think throughout my experience if I was an asshole. And I think I was a couple times. Of course, not calling anybody any names, but there was frustration at times of why are you doing this, or why are you, I don't know. I had, and we were talking about just playing the blame game earlier too, like not blaming anybody. So I'm not blaming anybody at all.
Yeah.
But there are good providers and bad ones.
Yeah.
And there's good nurses, and there's terrible ones too. And so I really do believe, I'd say 80%. Say 90% of the people that I encountered at Harborview were stellar.
Yeah.
But then there was 10%.
Sure.
And it wasn't, they weren't even on the borderline. They were just, wow. Like, can't believe this person's here. So yeah, I did get some, I can't say that I was good that way. I think that I wasn't perfect.
No, you don't have to be perfect. I mean, frustration is different than rude, you know?
Yeah.
You can be frustrated and not, again, not call people names or just try to have some understanding.
So, yeah, that's a good one. That's a good one. That's contributing.
Yeah.
I like that. But so thank you. I think we're at, did we make an hour? Did we break it?
Ooh, 106.
106. I think you did awesome for your first. Is this your first one?
Yeah. No, I've listened to like 3 podcasts in my life. I've never definitely never done one. This is fun.
This is cool. Yeah. And I think you might be, I mean, if you ever think about doing your own, which I think you'd be good at.
I like the board with all the lights. That's fun.
Yeah. I think you'd, if that's, everybody's got to have their reasons to do things, right? but I think you did great. So thank you for spending some time with me.
Yeah, that's fun.
And it just definitely seemed like we had the perfect day for it.
Yeah.
All right.
Cool.
All right.
All right.
Sayonara.
Peace out.